I like this story because the guy wasn't good at any of this when he started.
Right.
You don't start out a pro at this stuff. You know, you start out going, I got to try it, and let's roll it out, and you get better at it as you go. All right, it's time for The Growth Show. This week, we'll be talking about your marketing. Does it cost you money, or does it make you money? What a critical distinction. We'll talk about Twitter ads, radio campaigns, and all sorts of other great stuff. All that and more coming up right now.
Oftentimes, it's the ones that are successful loved what they did so they could persevere when it got really tough. And the ones that didn't love it quit.
I learned many great lessons from my father, not the least of which was that you can fail at what you don't want. So you might as well take a chance on doing what you love.
Welcome to the most indispensable show for people doing the hard work of growing your business. It's the marketing podcast by entrepreneurs for entrepreneurs. Welcome to Grow the Dream.
All right, welcome to The Growth Show, episode 9. David Johnson here. We're glad you're here, along with my world-famous co-host. Well, you're soon to be world-famous, if not already.
Yeah.
So I've got Rod Thompson, world-famous journalist. Well, at least 30-year veteran journalist.
Right.
Published. You've been published in the New York Times. I got to hear that story sometime. Like,
well, that's only a function of working at papers that were owned by the New York Times, and they picked up my stories.
It's a nice claim to fame, though.
It's fun to put out there.
It means you wrote good stories.
And it does, and it also means once it went through the New York Times, it meant that New York Times editors called and said, okay, so we're going to run this, so now you have to completely redo it.
Yeah, right?
It's like, oh.
But you've joined the other side now, so you're working with businesses, helping them get publicity and exposure, and you're helping them with their messaging.
Right. Right.
Which is a valuable thing.
Every business needs it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the other co-host, as always, our partner in crime, Josh Muccio, the kid.
You can call me the Wanderer.
You're the Wanderer now.
Because I think I'm new, something new every week.
You do kind of have something new every week.
You have something new every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You know,
life is very eventful.
I used to think that I was like on the edges of testing stuff. But man, some of the stuff you come back with is... I think you're testing some things that I might not even test.
Yeah, like Twitter ads?
Well, no, I've done Twitter ads for a while now, actually.
Have you?
Yeah. Yeah, we've
successfully?
We've played, yeah, yes. And I mean, these are not right for everybody all the time, for sure. But I had never tested what you tested this week on Twitter ads, though.
That was crazy.
Yeah, so tell us about it. What did you test?
Well, I tried, they have these new things called Quitter.
Well, that was what you became after.
Yeah,
you
yeah. Well, they had. There's a thing where you can create a Twitter card where it will actually sync with your website, and without them actually having to go to your website within the Twitter client, they can click a button that says subscribe, and they'll shoot you their email to your email marketing client or whatever it is.
And so, as a Twitter user, when you're logged in, you see one of these pop up, and your email address is already filled in. You just press a button, and
exactly. You
become an email subscriber.
And I thought, you know what? That's just so much easier for the user.
Yeah, let's
like,
try it.
That's going to be the right way to do it. Well, I think Twitter just like charges up the wazoo for that.
Oh,
and
man.
I mean, then the first day, I had like 13,000 impressions in 24 hours, which is awesome. But then when you listen to how many emails I got.
So 13,000 impressions.
Impressions. I got 4 emails. Okay. And this is the best part right here. 3 of them were from Costa Rica. One of them was from United Arab Emirates.
Oh, good. So you did the geo-targeting on your stuff, too.
I said, let's do it for any English-speaking person because my newsletter
is in English.
English. And I figured I'd target it by followers of people. I figured that was narrow enough.
You had 3
Apparently
out of 4
not.
Of them in Costa Rica?
Right?
Hey, I like Costa Rica, man. It's
so,
like,
yeah, so
like
do
what,
I.
What resonated about my ad about
Costa Ricans? Well, there's a lot of expatriates in Costa Rica.
It's true, man. It's the number one place in the world for U.S. expats.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I had some emojis on there. So maybe
hey.
Expats like emojis.
Maybe they like the emojis. Who knows? Hey, but I think a lot of business people can identify with what you just said, right? You try out this new ad thing because it comes along or whatever it is. And then when you look at it later, you're like, well, I just paid some tuition.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, $5 is what it ended up breaking down to be, $5 per lead.
And how much is your email subscriber worth in your business right now?
Well,
each subscriber.
It would take me a long time to make back that $5.
That $5 per was a little high, huh?
So, yeah. I mean, we're redoing our strategy and optimizing for engagements instead of leads.
Yeah.
And then hopefully we'll get more click-throughs to the site and then collect their email there. I'm pretty much dropping the Twitter card thing because that's ridiculously expensive.
Yeah, it is. Well, you know, Twitter ads have come a long way. In the original version, which we tested it very early, we were running events. And actually, these were in Tampa. So I was trying to do a little major market deal instead of in Sarasota.
Okay.
So we were putting butts and seats in an event in Tampa. and we did some Twitter ads. And what I found was that they didn't stop running them on schedule very well. They've improved a lot now. But in the early days, if you said your budget was $100, they would spend $150 before they turn them off.
What?
You know? Oh, yeah. So they were not hitting the mark. And Facebook had the same problem
not
early
cool.
on, actually, with their ad platform. And their geo-targeting didn't work well. So we were doing a similar deal.
I want to target this area.
Yep.
We're going to do Costa Rica.
We'll try to hit it.
Yeah. I was doing an event in Miami and for a client. We were running an event for a client. And we did geo-targeting within like 50 miles of Miami. When it showed up in my news feed, let's see, how many hours away? We're 4-hour drive. How many miles? I don't know.
Yeah.
What, 200 miles, 250 miles? From
sure.
Somewhere in there. Anyway, we're pretty far away from Miami is my point.
Right.
When it showed up in my own news feed, I realized I was overpaying because the geotargeting just wasn't working very well. But, hey, you know, all of these ad networks and pay-per-click things, they start out not quite working just right, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
And it's a learning curve. It's
sure
a learning
is.
Curve for us using them, too. And for them improving their product.
Absolutely. So yeah. Today we're going to be talking about whether your marketing is actually a cost.
Oh, yeah. The topic for today.
The topic. You know, so I like this topic because it's a little bit of toying with our audience a little bit. So you're listening today. Do you think of marketing as a cost? Rod, is marketing something that goes into the cost column in the accounting spreadsheet?
Well, if you're looking at your marketing and all you see is a cost, then your marketing is not working for you.
Well, my comment earlier before we started recording was, you know, if your marketing is a cost, you must be spending it on branding.
Yeah. There you go. Because clearly, if your marketing is working, it's a revenue generator for you.
Right.
And I understand that any budget needs a line item for that sort of thing. You got to have a budget for your marketing. But in the end, if you only see it as a cost, then either it's not working for you or you don't have a handle on what your marketing is producing.
Yeah, you don't understand.
Either of those are a problem because you really need to be able to measure your marketing in some fashion. Can't measure branding quite so well. But generally
yes,
speaking, particularly nowadays, you can. Sure. I said not so well. You can do a lot better now than you used to be able to.
Well, especially the kind of branding that you normally work in.
Right.
Which is a little different than buying ads for awareness.
But
right?
What bothers me about it is the people that you talk to that are all about the brand awareness at the radio stations or the TVs, ads will discourage you from finding ways to measure it because their argument is that it's brand awareness. It has this ethereal effect that will forever cement your business in stone.
They're selling ads on their station.
Well, that's why business owners hate working with people like that because, you know, at the end of the day, those people thrive on your inability to measure and quantify the result.
And then they say stuff like, yeah, and you're going to get some Google ads for this too. And
oh,
you're like,
yeah.
Wait a second.
You're talking about the Yellow Pages people now, aren't you?
Yeah, you can call me out on that, but yeah. Okay.
Well, because they've all reinvented themselves. They're now internet marketing experts. They're what do they call themselves? Like consultants who grow your business or whatever. And it's, dude, you're just a Yellow Page. I'm sorry. There are probably good ones out there, but a lot of these people are selling inferior products at the end of the day.
Right. And although I do want to say a little shout out for radio here. And this is probably going to just tip Josh right out of his chair. But a number of years ago when I was an executive editor and I was doing radio spots for our publication, and the spots ran.
How many years ago?
And
you said a number.
And that was a number. Yeah.
There was a number in there.
There was a number. Actually, the paper's still doing those spots. But they ran in Tampa and in Sarasota, Bradenton market.
So for context, for somebody who's not aware of Florida, Tampa Bay is like the 16th or 17th largest market in the United States.
Right.
So, and Sarasota, Bradenton is pretty far down the list.
Right.
So in terms
in a lot of measurements, actually, they're clumped together.
Yeah.
Too. I know. It's a funky thing. But anyway, so we did those and it's very hard to measure that because we were doing them strictly for the purpose of branding the business publication.
The publication, right.
And, you know.
And you guys ran a stellar publication, by the way.
Thank you very much. We thought so, too.
I never
actually think
it.
It's still really good. I don't know.
Because it was on paper, Jeff.
Yeah, it was paper. But it's also online. Just saying. But to my point here,
right? The radio must have done something for you.
Well, it did, because I can't tell you how many places that I would go to, because we did as sort of a little bit of the face and the voice of it at that time. You know, I went to a lot of events and all, and I would go to them, and I cannot tell you how many times people said, "Oh, I recognize your voice."
Ah, yeah.
Isn't that interesting? It was the only real metric of measurement that there was on it that I could see at the time. But what it told me was, well, this is sort of effective, because I was at events that would be readers for the publication.
Sure. Yeah.
And so it was all making sense. And I thought, you know what? There's no great way to measure it. The radio didn't have any good way to measure it, but it was working.
Right.
I don't know how well, but it was definitely working. I was very surprised to get that sort of feedback, that not just, oh, I've heard of your word, I recognize your voice.
So we could talk about how to optimize radio campaigns, because you know what? They can be very effective, especially in markets where you have the ability to hit a station in particular, or stations that you really selected on purpose, right? They're your listener, or your customers are listeners of those stations. But we've done very well with radio ads over the years, and we've had some, you know, tuition paying moments with radio, you know.
I mean, I think the one the little ditty song for the Pink Plumber. Pink Plumber, you know, which that started off, and I thought, what a weird idea and everything. That guy's really made a go of it. He advertises on radio like crazy with his little ditty song and all. It's
and
really
they do well
working.
For those not in the Tampa Bay market. This is a company that is a plumber. They got a nice jingle-ish kind of thing going with a hook in it. But the reason they call themselves the Pink Plumber is they donate a portion of all their proceeds to breast cancer research.
Yep.
So he's doing multiple things right there. He's got
an
excellent hook.
Smart.
He's tied into a campaign, an issue that people care about. You know, you could probably do the numbers, and I don't know what they are off the top of my head, but a breast cancer affects someone that you know.
Right.
Most likely.
Right.
You know, whoever you are,
exactly.
You know someone.
Yep.
And it's an easy thing to do. Now, we could talk about whether the Susan B. Komen Foundation is a good place to donate to. That's a whole other question. But the plumber is doing something smart, because he's attached himself to an issue that people care about. It's a smart campaign.
It is a smart campaign, and he's a smart marketer with it, and he's used radio to do it. So all I'm saying is
you just have to stand out. You can't
be boring.
You have
to be smart about it. But, you know, you have to be smart with Twitter cards, it turns out, too. You know?
So what you're saying is how to use a nonprofit to make money for your business.
Well, or a cause. It doesn't have to be a nonprofit, but just connecting yourself to a cause.
Yeah, to a cause. No, actually, I was just saying that radio can be effective if it's used smartly.
So here's the other
thing. How to make money off of somebody who's doing something really good.
Well, Susan B. Komen does spend $1 zillion a year on branding. I don't know what it is, but they do a lot.
Yeah, they've gotten a lot of grief for that.
It was easy.
And they pay themselves well, too.
Yeah, of course. But it was easy for the plumber to tag onto that money, was the point. So, but, you know, the other side here's what you can do to measure things that are offline, like radio ads, television ad, print ad. Use a dedicated landing page and mention the dedicated landing page only in that ad.
But that's why, and you hear a lot of, when you hear talk radio people doing a spot for somebody, they said, and use promo code, you know, whatever it is.
Which
you know,
that works too, but a lot of people don't have checkouts for their small businesses. The promo code doesn't work, but if you use a dedicated.
Even easier way to do that, because a lot of times people won't do it, because they'll just remember the domain name, because that's easier.
Or they'll Google you, which happens too, right?
If you use a dedicated because you can buy a new URL for, you know, like
$12
a year. Use that URL and then just tell your domain registrar where you register that URL to forward that to your website.
Right.
And that will show up in your Google Analytics account as forwarded from that URL. And then you can segment how well that ad did.
Well, it depends on what you're trying to do with the ad, though, too.
So, you might lose branding that way.
Well, here's the other side of it, right? So let's say that you've got... let's say you're a plumber. I mean, why do we keep talking about plumbers?
I don't know.
You brought up a completely different plumber this time.
In a different market.
Anyway, so you're the Pink Plumber, and you say, listen, for every we're giving away a new free report on how to find leaks in your house before they go bad on you, before they cause problems, and we'll send you the free report. For every person that downloads the free report, we're gonna donate $1 to breast cancer research. Right?
Right.
And so you say, just go to pinkplumberreport.com, right?
Right.
So, or whatever you call it, right?
But that's how you're going to measure then the effectiveness of that ad.
Hugely measurable. So for every email address, you have to measure it, because you got to donate the correct amount, right?
Right.
But now I did this only on my ads on this radio station, and we ran them for this 3 weeks or whatever the period was.
So we spent X amount of money,
and
here's what we got.
Right.
And then you can decide if it was worth the money or not.
And put a dedicated phone number on there, too.
Well, phone numbers are harder to remember in radio ads. I would argue that it's not necessarily the best move, because you got to use a lot of your 30 seconds repeating the phone number for people to get it.
Oh, cool. Well, I'm just saying, if you're going to use a phone number, make it measurable.
Agreed. Yeah, yeah, make it measurable. Yeah. Agreed. And that's good for offline apps.
The last four numbers for the pink plumber is pink.
That's cute.
All right, so it's easy to remember. See, he's doing a lot of stuff right.
He's doing a lot right. He
is. All right, so in that case, is marketing a cost? See, I like the idea of doing radio ads that are measurable and quantifiable, like we just described. That would be hugely measurable.
Yep.
And now you can say, well, for everybody that downloads the free report, see, now in the free report, that's where you put your unique phone number, right? So that when people call from the free report, and in every email follow-up, because you definitely don't just send them the free report, you also have a campaign to follow them up and send them tips on how to take better care of their house, or maintenance tips, or stories about problems that you solved that are unusual as a plumber, and whatever else that you do. And now you've got some content going out, and every one of those emails, you've got a unique phone number, unique URL for them to click, like click to schedule an appointment.
Yeah.
You know, it's a unique URL. It's measured. It's tracked. And then you really can measure, you know, now you have the ability to measure a conversion rate.
Yeah, exactly.
So for every dollar I spent on radio ads, I got X number of email subscribers. And then from those, I got X number of dollars in revenue in the business.
And, you know, it's not just dollars. It's time. You know, if you're running a campaign and you've got to push for something specific, it's your time, your effort, your resources. And money is just one piece of it. And you need to know whether this campaign as a whole was successful. That, you know.
Right.
It's not all about
money.
So, in
a sense, this is a marrying of old tech and new tech together, using the new tech to better measure the old tech than it ever could have been before.
Well, and phone number. And if you're thinking like, oh, that's too complicated to set up a new phone, oh, it's so easy. I mean, and it's so cheap, too. There's companies out there that are doing
it. Or a new landing page URL. So
landing pages are easy, whether it's even on the same URL. You know, it's just not hard to do these days. You've got so many tools available. And, you know, I think we should start a new segment on the show. We talked about it a little bit off air before we started, but I think we should start a new segment. And maybe today we tackle this in our new segment, right? Do a little marketing school. We got to come up with a name for it, though. Can we just be transparent? We don't have a good name for this yet.
Yeah.
Let us know if you have a good name for marketing school.
So we'll do a little marketing school set. We'll do 5 minutes or 3 minutes or something on a topic like headlines for your ads.
I think we just did marketing school on how to measure a radio ad campaign.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, but it's also it's also the mentality that says we're going to move from thinking about marketing as a cost to actually being able to say, no, it's an income generator that I can measure.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of people just don't spend money on marketing when they think they're doing well. And this is one of the problems that I see a lot with business owners, right? Marketing is something that
I made that mistake for sure.
Yeah, sure. And you scramble to do marketing when, oh, crap, you know, things got bad. I was just reading a story this morning about it's not a plumber, but it's a pool company. So we're switching things up this morning. But I read a story about a pool company in, I think they were in Virginia, that hit the recession in 2008, right? And they relied on advertising. They had spent, in 2007, they spent like $250,000 or something near that. I'm probably screwing the numbers up slightly, to generate $4 million in revenue. Now, a pool is one of the things that you do, that you build on your house when you're doing well, right? So 2008 hits, recession, and I think he said that a bunch of his deposits dried up right away. Like, people started going, hey, you know what? That pool we made a deposit on, we're going to need that back, that deposit back. So, he hit 2009 in bad shape, and he said, I got to do something different. And obviously, he wasn't spending money on ads anymore. And so he began creating useful content online. And I won't screw up the whole story. I won't tell the whole story, because we might try to get this guy as a guest. He's got a really great story. But here was my point. By the time he got on the other side of all of this in 2011, so just a few years later, they spent $20,000 on advertising. So about 10% of what they had done in 2007. And their revenue was $4.5 million.
So was he, when you're talking about, was he doing content marketing essentially?
He essentially switched gears from doing mostly advertising. They had never touched content marketing. That's he had a brochure online for his website, and that was it. But he switched.
Right, well, 2009 is still relatively early. In
content marketing, sure. Yes. You know, a lot of, for small businesses, definitely.
Right.
But, you know, small businesses. So here's what he did. Actually, this is worth doing. He said, I generated a list of every question I could think of that a customer had asked me in the process of buying a pool, right?
I can imagine that's a lot.
He said it numbered in the hundreds pretty quickly. Like, it was well over 100, but just in one session of sitting down and thinking about it. Because he'd been selling pools for a number of years by then. So, you know, you got a pretty good grip on that. And what he did is he said, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to write a blog post to answer each question. And he said, I wasn't being salesy. I was just purely being useful. I'm going to answer
value
the question.
Content
exactly.
right there.
Yeah, deliver value. And he said a strange thing started to happen. They started to get more Google traffic. And then pretty soon they started to get inquiries. And what happened was he said that a little later on, he wasn't good at measuring analytics early. And I like this story because the guy wasn't good at any of this when he started.
Right.
You know, you don't start out a pro at this stuff. You know, you start out going, I got to try it and let's roll it out. And you get better at it as you go. But he said later he got pretty good at analytics and they were able to tell that if someone visited 30 pages on their website and had made it through 30 pages and then filled out the contact form, like I'm interested in a pool, they closed 80% of those leads.
Amazing.
And he said the industry average is to close 10% of your leads.
That's incredible.
So
those are great leads.
How long did it take him to do this?
Well, I think it was a year.
Okay.
And he said he was working 60, 80 hours a week like he always had been.
Huh.
And after his kids and his wife went to bed, he was up at night writing answers to questions on his blog.
Mm-hmm.
But
you can get so much work done.
Yeah,
the kids go to bed.
I'm the other way around. I'd get up early and do it, you know, for me. But the point was,
that works too.
He was doing something to do really useful content online. And I'm excited about this. Here's where I read the book. Okay, here's where I read his story. It was in the book Utility by Jay Baer.
That's Y-O-Utility.
Y-O-Utility. And Jay Baer is going to be our guest in a couple of weeks.
Looking forward to that.
I tell you what, this guy is
terrific.
Really, really good.
You don't want to miss that show.
Jay Baer is... I was going to tell him to listen to this episode, and now I'm not.
No,
thanks, Josh.
No, we can't.
Yeah. No, Jay Baer is one of the top speakers on content marketing and marketing in general. So he speaks frequently. He's a keynote speaker. He's written a couple of excellent books, and I'm just starting Utility. So
if he's a content marketer, he probably has a blog.
He's got one of the top rated marketing blogs in the world. It's called convinceandconvert.com. So looking to check out our upcoming guests, you can check him out on convinceandconvert.com. He's a fantastic guy. And he's also hosting a couple of podcasts. And
Just a couple.
You know, he's not a busy content guy at all. He's
no, not at all. It does a daily thing, 3 minutes.
Yeah, J-Today.
And
it's not quite daily. I think it's like three times a week now. But it's a three-minute video. And I'll tell you what, he's just cranking out fantastic content. I'm looking forward to
him.
Yep. But you know what? He's an example, though. A lot of his content is not necessarily accessible for a business owner because you can access it. I don't mean that, but you can find him. But a lot of the stuff is targeted maybe at a little bit of a different audience than the one we serve. And he'll probably argue with me about that when we have him on because he's probably going to tell me that he serves those pool companies.
Well, I look forward to listening to him make that case for that.
I hope so. I'm gonna definitely ask him the question. So, so let's talk about this marketing cost thing, right? If marketing is a cost, what are some of the other things that we run into when we talk to people who think about marketing as a line item cost? Or what was it you ran into over there, Josh, that got you excited a minute ago?
Well, it's completely unrelated.
Okay.
I have two things that got excited for me. I had a business idea on air.
You had a business idea?
I get business ideas all the time, and most of them I never follow through on because...
You're an entrepreneur.
They're just crazy. Yeah, I'm an entrepreneur. But you know, what the heck? I'll just say it. You know, I'm not the morning guy.
Okay.
I like to work late, but I don't like to work. I'd rather be the morning guy.
Oh, okay.
Because I think it's a better habit.
Yeah.
And it just makes more sense. But I'm just not. So if I want to get work done, I do it at night. Otherwise, it doesn't get done.
Sure.
But
you got to work with what works for you, though.
But this magic thing called coffee.
Yeah. It is a magic
bean. If
it was
somehow injected into my system at like 5 a.m.,
if there was only some way you could have coffee at
like
5 a.m., I know.
Intravenously.
Well, that's different.
Well, you know, they do make caffeine pills.
Well, I mean, I would have to wake up to put that in. I'm saying something that's
you
automated.
You want an automated thing that just... So you're going to go to bed with an IV in your arm and then like set an alarm at 5 a.m. for it to start dripping?
This is when the
time-release
merging of technology
caffeine pills.
And people...
They make
starts
those.
Happening.
Yeah.
They do make them.
But
they time release. You know, like 8 hours later, you take it when you go to bed at night. It releases
later. They do is they just consistently release over a long period of time. I don't think there's a delayed release time. You know.
Man, that would.
Okay, so what else excited you, Josh?
Did you guys see the health concerns in wearable tech? The the New York Times article.
Okay, no, I haven't seen that. I've read some health concerns previously, but I didn't see whatever.
Well, the same stuff as having a cell phone to your ear, right?
Right, no. But they got in so much flack for it because it was all about wearables, and they may have referenced some questionable sources.
Science?
The New York Times did?
Yes.
Do tell.
And, I mean, there were, yeah. You got to check this out. I mean, there are people that wrote, I forget who wrote it, but somebody was basically like, why their article is like really, really bad. And it's really, really bad. Like,
which is
this
newsworthy.
Was a horribly written article.
When the New York Times makes a screw up like that, that's pretty newsworthy. Right.
If you do it on your blog, nobody cares. But when the New York Times does it, everybody cares. And the point being that these wearables that you're going to start embedding in your... in your body, or even just the iWatch that's coming out, is a significant health concern.
But then it's not called the iWatch, though, right? It's just called the Apple Watch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is called that.
Yeah.
I made the mistake that I judged other people for doing.
I just had to call you out on it,
no,
Josh. Keep going.
Actually,
though.
I appreciate that you did. That brings me back down to my human state. Okay, so the point that they make is that we shouldn't be concerned right now about the iWatch because it doesn't actually have a 3G antenna on it.
You can't
said actually
it again.
Make calls.
Or the Apple Watch
the
either.
The Apple Watch, really? Whatever it is. But we should be concerned when our watches or our ear, you know, like Google Glass, is getting cellular connectivity because that is what the concern is.
Because it's the short antenna with the really high, is that the deal?
And then he also mentions the batteries that go into powering these things and how much... that can actually put off as far as radiation, and nobody really knows the effects of it. But so that article was torn to shreds, but somebody else wrote another article on Medium that was saying, hey, yeah, that was a horribly written article, but we should be concerned still.
And did they have some science maybe to back it up?
No, he didn't have some science, but he was like, hey, like we should still be concerned about this. And we are concerned about this. And to your argument, you were saying something about reading on paper. And I thought, you know what? I need to do some more reading on paper.
It's healthier. It's
because I'm
healthier.
Looking at screens all the time. And this was his point in the Medium article was looking at screens constantly has significant...
Dude, you have a magnificent screen tan. I got to tell you. It really becomes
that
you.
Late night pallor.
Well, yes. You know, I'm on the phone reading in the evening. Like, that's what I use. And even if
you
I get
use
a
your
book.
Phone.
Yeah,
wow.
Even
you,
if I...
I use my iPad in the evening, but I actually have come to really, really appreciate a book.
Okay,
does it have anything to do with the bifocals? Is it?
No, I think it has to do with looking at a screen so much of the day.
Oh, yeah,
just like
yeah.
Yeah.
The
focus,
point.
The like eye fatigue from focusing.
The point is.
Oh, there was a point. Okay, keep going.
That these screens, before you go to sleep, horribly affect your quality
that's
of sleep.
That's very true.
Any
light source.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, my next question is, well, what about the Kindle Paperwhite? Because that's kind of like a mixture of paper and light. And it's more gentle on the eyes.
Is the Paperwhite the backlit one?
Yes, but it's a very gently backlit.
Because I bought my wife the non-backlit one, and she loves it. But she has to have a light source, of course, for it to work. You know, so then it kind of defeats the purpose. But no, it's true. And if you watch TV before you go to bed, the same thing is true because you've got the light source and the screen, and these things are blowing light beams at your eyes. You know, and it does. It affects your sleep quality. It really does.
Interesting. So, total tangent, and it might not be worth anything, but. I had to mention it.
So what affects my sleep even worse is when I'm up late working because I'm working. It's not because I'm looking at a screen. It's because I'm actually still.
Right. And so your mind is highly engaged right before going to bed.
Yeah.
Makes it hard to go to sleep.
But then the sleep deprivation. No, I don't have any problem going to sleep.
Oh, okay.
It's sleep deprivation at my level. You know, my wife just gets mad at me because when I hit the pillow, I'm out. It's gone. You know, it's over. But the sleep deprivation could be a problem over time. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's science on that for sure. But
sure
you're talking
is.
About wearables like Google Glass or maybe the watches, the fitness watches, like the Fitbit and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Or the new
they're saying
like
they're
Samsung
they're cool,
watches
fine,
and all that.
Because they just have Wi-Fi and Bluetooth on them. They don't have 3G connectivity.
About,
so they're saying
the
it's cool.
See, I think the Bluetooth, I wonder if like the cellular, I realize it has to be a lot more power to do,
it's,
high power
it's
to do
cellular.
It's the
difference between short range and long range.
Sure. I get that.
And the cellular antennas have to be
but Bluetooth
a lot more
is, it's still a signal. I don't know. And especially like with the ones that you got it in your ear, that is so freaking close to your brain.
But the point being, that's actually better than having a cell phone up to your ear.
I understand why, you know, but I still am just questioning. I'm not sure about all of it, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Like, I'm trying to do everything I can to keep the signals a little further away. I'm using wired headsets a lot, you know, to talk on.
That's healthy.
Well, maybe, maybe not. I don't know. I mean, because then maybe the radiation travels right up the wire. You know, I don't know.
I don't think so.
I don't know. I just don't think we have a lot of science on this stuff yet. But you know what? The stuff is great for productivity. I'm not sure what it has to do with marketing costs at the moment, but you know,
yes.
it's
you know, I'm
it's an interesting discussion.
I had to bring it up.
I agree. Okay.
So Percolate.com estimates Nestle spends $127,500 a day on its Facebook posts.
Wait, what?
Speaking of marketing costs, because we're back on the cost of
marketing. $100,000
a day. $127,500. Percolate is estimating that based on the number of posts. Nestle's posts approximately 1,500 pieces of content each day across its brand's Facebook pages. 1,500.
Okay, for each brand. Whoa.
Because it's doing it for each of their brands and all. And they figured it at, you know, hourly rate and amount of time per post and that sort of thing. And that's what they came up with for them. And so, because they have this infographic on, you know, what are your marketing costs and whether it's worth it or not. And of course, we're talking more in the 30,000 foot level when we're talking about marketing.
So brands like KitKat, Gerber, Stouffer's, Perrier, Lean Cuisine, Butterfinger, Power Bars, Häagen-Dazs, Nesquik, these are all Nestle brands. They do have a lot of brands. I mean, you know, in fact,
and apparently they're Facebooking each one of them individually.
So, which they should do, actually. Each one of those is pretty unique. But $1,500 a day.
No, no.
1,500 pieces of content a day is $127,500 a day.
$127,500 a day.
And Nestle's a big company.
Percolate is are they suggesting that that's ad promotion money, or it's just the cost of creating the content and putting it out there? Is it
for content marketing?
For content marketing as a whole. Mm-hmm. What's funny is that just a couple of days ago, there was an article published claiming that Nestle is draining California's aquifers in the middle of the drought, taking something like 80 million gallons a year to bottle water. Yeah. So maybe they need to up their spend on content marketing to overcome the bad publicity because California is in a bad situation with water.
Or they could just say, do you want a drink?
What?
Well, I mean, they're taking the water to be used as water, right?
Well, okay. I understand that.
No, but they're taking it out of California and shipping
but
it all
taking
over the world.
It, yeah,
sure. Go to Utah and see how Utahns feel about Californians taking their water. I mean, that out west has these water wars all the time.
Oh, water wars are a big deal out there. But
just
come
melt
is,
some snow up in Alaska.
But they're taking them. They're taking the water out of the aquifers, meaning they're getting it for free.
Right.
And then they're selling it to Californians
it for free.
As water. You don't think so?
No. How in the world can they get it out of there for free?
They own land.
They have to buy equipment, spend money on equipment, spend money on the people to do it, spend money to drill, spend money
Fair
to
enough.
Find,
okay.
spend money to get it out, to bottle it, to distribute it, to sell it.
But
That's
I'm saying they're not paying the state. I'm not saying they should either, by the way, but I'm just saying they're not paying the state for the water.
I'm pretty surprised at that because California will nick you for breathing.
Okay, maybe they are.
Yeah.
They're paying 65 cents for every 470 gallons they pump out of the ground.
To the state? Or for that's their overall overhead cost?
I'm not sure. I'm skimming an article, so I'd have to read it to know for sure. But
man, we are all over the place today.
We are.
All right, but hey, that's what your point is. Nestle can't sustain that kind of spend on content marketing unless
they're seeing a return on it. So if they are actually spending somewhere near that amount of money, and clearly whatever it is, at 1,500 Facebook posts a day, they're spending a lot of money on content marketing. They apparently are finding that their marketing is worth it. And maybe it's not actually even costing them. While they put the dollar figure at $127,500, it's possible that Nestle has a pretty good handle on what they're getting for that. They might be making money on it.
Well, right? I would suggest that they are. I mean, you know, when you see what brands are doing with ad spends versus content right now, it's a pretty startling thing to see the trends. And of course, this is why publications are going out of business. It's why television ad revenue is down. It's why, you know, all of the traditional media outlets that you're talking about, Rod, that, you know, people have traditionally spent their money on are suffering. But I guess our point is, if you're a small business and you're a business owner, you're part of a small business team, you need to have a grip on how you can get results out of whatever it is that you're spending on marketing, whether it's the salaries that you pay. If you pay a salary to somebody who's doing work, or if you just are stealing from your people's time, because, you know, you pay salaries to all your team, but there's no marketing person, but each one spends X amount of hours a week or a month or whatever it is doing something marketing related. Those are costs, whether you can quantify them easily or not. They're costs.
They are. And I think it's worth discussing just a little bit about how sometimes businesses make the mistake of saying, well, we need somebody to do social media marketing, but we already have Joanne over here who's handling this, that, and the other thing. Let's just have her do some posts each day too. And they count that as their social media marketing without a strategy behind it, without an understanding of what needs to be put into those posts, without, you know, the whole thing that goes into it that we're familiar with. Yeah. And then, by the way, it doesn't really actually happen. It only happens occasionally because it's a small part.
And you can't just post out there and expect results.
That's what I'm saying. That you need a strategy behind it.
So you're teeing me up for this story because we had an opportunity to provide a proposal a few months ago to a client, and I'm going to say as little as possible because I really like these people. But we had an opportunity to propose that we would take over some email marketing for them because they recognized that they'd been working really hard to build an email list, and they wanted to kind of maximize their opportunity to reach out to those people. And by the way, my contention is that if you're doing social and you're not doing email, you got the cart before the horse.
Absolutely.
You really probably should be focusing on email marketing in advance of social. In most cases, there's a, you know, rule to be broken. But, you know, in most cases, I would say that's true, especially for business owners.
Yeah, so don't have a social media strategy without an email marketing strategy.
You should be doing email first.
Yeah.
And by the way, I'm an offender at this already, I can tell you right now, because we've let our own email marketing drop a little bit while we've kept our social going.
Because you're so busy helping others.
It's true. We prioritize other people's work ahead of our own. That's been a habit, and it just
are you going to have to hire a content marketer to do your content marketing?
I really might. You know,
the cobbler's children have no shoes.
You know,
cobbler.
I do. When we're doing strategy, I do hire a strategist because I'm too close to my business,
right. That's
and
smart.
And it's a coaching thing. I need a coach to help me through that. But anyway, we provided a proposal. And you know what? This is a company that doesn't historically spend a lot of money on marketing. So they didn't really have a budget set aside that said, we're going to spend this somewhere. Let's spend it on you. They just were going to have to find that money somewhere in the, you know, business-wide budget and make it so. Well, I don't know if our fees were a little too high or if we just missed the mark on the proposal or what, but they decided that they were going to do it in-house. And they had a person who, you know, among other things, she had a little bit of a responsibility in marketing. And she was going to do it. To my knowledge, that was about 4 months ago. To my knowledge, they've sent 2 emails.
In 4 months.
And
so they have no email campaign going.
And one of them was this week. And I'll tell you what, I opened the email and I was thrilled. The content inside was fantastic. It was really good at serving their target market. It was really good.
I hear a comma but coming.
There is a but. The subject line was, are you ready? Drum roll. The drum roll is here. Subject line was March 2015.
Wow. I am so into what is ever going to open up in that email. I got to know what is about March 2015.
I'm so curious about what happened that day.
Wow. Or that month? This month?
I was okay. Horrified. And at the same time, my heart just sank. I was like, I know that they put a ton of work into the content for this email. I know that they produced really good content.
They'd been better off with a title that said, don't click. I think they would have.
Yeah,
had a
that
really,
actually would have opened would a lot more of them.
Whatever you do, don't open this email, right?
Yeah.
It hurts because, and this is why I think maybe today we could do a little segment if we wanted to in our marketing school or whatever we're going to call this thing, on how to write headlines, because the subject line of your email is the headline. In other words, it's the ad for the content. Think about it as an ad for the content inside. And if you're running a social post, the title of the social post is the headline for the content of your social post.
It must be
it's
engaging.
It's the ad for it.
Must be.
It's got to at least be interesting.
I remember when I was an editor that we would get press releases. Obviously, everybody sends press releases to editors, right? And so get a ton of press releases. Honestly, I cannot tell you how many times I got a press release where the subject line was press release.
I guarantee you, and you got all
excited inside. Said, "I love press releases."
Sometimes it was almost more curiosity. As you got to be killing me. This is so bad. But invariably, that's also a terrible content. So these are people. If you have press release or March 2015 as your subject line, you need help.
You do.
You just need help.
You know, you're in water.
Not psychological help. You just need help with your marketing is all.
You're in water that's over your head. It's just a little deep for you. And by the way, that's not a big skill to learn. I mean, it's an important skill to learn. It's not hard to learn. I mean, you know, we could hit some highlights today. And if you guys think we should, we'll do it in a few minutes. But we could hit some highlights on what to do. You know, that would be a better way to put subjects in your email.
Yeah, I mean, you're the expert in this. I'm not. I just have this little thing I go to, this document that's like, here's 100 really good titles.
And did that come from
spin off of those?
Was that an AppSumo thing?
No, but it's just a PDF. But I'm sure if AppSumo has one, that one is also good.
I don't know if they did. I thought of them because I seem to recall them offering something a while ago. But I think it might have been pre-written emails for various purposes. But anyway, it was good. It was good stuff. But yeah, if you guys want to, I think we could jump into that real quick. But we don't have to do it yet. Let's talk about other marketing.
So we're talking about cost. I have a thought. What if someone in our audience listening right now doesn't have a marketing budget because they're either they're just starting out or they just don't have money to dedicate to that yet. They aren't big enough. And I would say there's a lot of businesses that fall into that boat.
Or maybe they're in the situation you were in where you have something going that isn't really a big cost, but it's producing a bunch of stuff for you and you're not really dependent on marketing, so to speak, or at least you don't think you are.
Right.
Until that thing quits working for you.
Right.
Which was what happened to you. We told your story a couple of weeks ago when the Google traffic died. It was the episode.
Yeah. And I mean, the point is you need to have multiple marketing channels that you get leads from. But even more importantly, so if you're in this boat, you've got two choices. You can either spend money on your marketing or you can hustle like it's nobody's business and be the marketer of your business.
Right.
And that's how a lot of people start out. And that's, I think it's a really great way to start because you don't have the budget and you're going to learn so much when you just hustle.
Right. Right, exactly. I think that there's a real place, particularly when you are young, just starting out. When I mean young as a company and all, and like the guy in Dave's example of the pool maker, and he just had to learn it himself. And sometimes it's a trial and error. And if you have no real budget to speak of, where you can spend, but you have more hours in your day you're willing to commit to your company, like most entrepreneurs start, you know,
well, you have to make more hours.
That's the way to do it. The thing is that I think our point in this is that it's worth making the hours. I mean, you really need to make the hours because you got to have a good product and a good service, but if people don't know about it, if you're not getting your message out to the right audience, to the people who are going to be interested in buying your product or service, then even if you have a great product and service, it just doesn't sell itself.
So how do you do it on the cheap? How do you hustle in this online world other than just going to a million different, you know, meetups or marketing meetings, which is a great way to gain business locally, to get started, get your name out there. But how do you leverage some of the things that we're talking about in this show when you're on a budget?
You know, and I'm not sure. I when it comes to networking meetings and stuff, I've done some of them. And I know some people just live and swear by them. But I got to tell you, to me, because I'm business to business, I usually need to talk to an owner or a CEO. Usually,
and
for it to make
there.
Sense. No, they got a flunky who, forgive me, that's not the right way to say that.
Uh-oh.
I might be offending some of my good friends. They got people they send, you know, and they're usually not the ones there because it's somebody's job as a rainmaker, maybe a salesperson, maybe a, I know one brand that I work with, the one company that I work with, they have an ambassador, you know. They don't have a dedicated marketing staff at all.
Yeah, and I know.
But they
know
have a
that,
brand.
I know who that company is.
Yeah, they have a brand ambassador, and he goes to all
and
of those meetings.
And he loves it, and he's great at it.
He's excellent. He's the world's best at it. But you know what? He couldn't make a decision to save his life on a purchase that they're going to make. So he's not the guy I want to meet with.
But, right. But I will
which is
tell
why
you
I don't go to those.
You know? There are a lot of networking events. I go to some of them because I have clients. I'm actually like the hired flunky.
You are the flunky.
The consulting flunky.
Hey, it's your job to go. Okay.
It is.
I'm sorry for calling you a flunky.
Are there any events that it's worth going to?
Yes. And that's where I was going to go. Because some of these, I mean, you can't just go to anything. You need to pick and choose. But there's a lot of events that I go to where it's almost nothing but decision makers. At it. You're going to have the business owners, you're going to have the CEOs, you're going to have
do tell.
Yeah, there are. And then And that why I would say,
hook me up, brother. Let's go.
Your local EDC is going to be filled with those people. Now, you know, that's a steeper price.
Tell people what that is.
That's an economic development corporation. The generic term is economic development organizations, EDOs, and every community has them. Everyone has them. It's a little steeper price to get into.
They're quasi-private, right? They're government.
They have there's a lot of different setups. Even in Tampa Bay, there's different setups.
Oh, okay, all right. So ours is quasi. It's like a private-public partnership.
But most are a mix.
Yeah.
Yep, they're mixed. They get some public funding from local governments, and then they get a lot of private funding. And there's a few that are just private. There's a few that are just public. But the point is that their point is, their whole thing is to try to advocate for high-end development, economic development, which is try and get good tech companies, whatnot. In Sarasota, a big emphasis on life sciences and medical technology, that sort of thing.
I heard a chamber pitch this week that claimed that the chamber was doing all of that stuff, and I'm like, I don't think so.
They're not, but they're involved with it too, because chambers will work with the EDC. But a chamber networking event is going to be a little bit more what you're talking about. Now, depending on the networking event, because some of these, like I know our local chamber has like a power hour lunch or whatever. These are almost all small business owners, because part of what they do with that is you get to stand up and pitch your business, you know, like a 60-second pitch during.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
And so everybody gets to do that. You know, there's different networking organizations that people are part of that are strictly B2B, but the EDCs are a great one for being. Now, the only thing I'd say about the EDC is it's more expensive to be a part of than the local chamber.
Yeah.
But so there are.
I'd rather spend that money on Facebook ads.
Okay, and actually, it depends. Yeah. But actually, probably doing both if you can.
And that's another good
would
point.
Be ideal.
Is it you know, you got to. You also can't shotgun all your money. So you need to start with something that you know you're getting results that you can measure, and then move on, add something to it. You know, don't just try everything all at once, but move on. And what I like about that idea, and by the way, I have been to some networking events that have been fruitful. So I'm
okay.
So
what's another way you can hustle other than going to network events?
Well, I'm a huge believer, as you guys know, in content. That's why we spent our first episode. We were talking about content.
But
it's the pool company, you know, we just told about.
But the traditional content that you write on your blog, your business blog, takes a long time to gain traction.
So I feel like Josh is slow walking us to some sort of epiphany that he actually has an answer for here.
So what are you thinking?
I don't.
Oh.
I'm curious what you guys have to say. I just know that when you don't have a budget, you have to hustle your brains out.
Yeah, if you have more time than you have money, I honestly would spend that time on content. And here's why I believe that's good. Because number one, you can put a few dollars behind it and promote the daylights out of it. So if you've gotten to a place where your content is useful, if it's useful content to your target audience, then put a little Facebook or Twitter promotion behind it, depending on where you live and who your target market is. Twitter may or may not be a good idea, but Facebook can be a fantastic place for you to spend $10 and see, like, the $20 that you spent on Twitter ads this week, right? I'm glad you did it, because you tested something,
yeah.
and you learned something from it. So that's fantastic.
And I'm not giving up. I'm going to try again.
Of course,
again.
Yeah, you'll try a different version, right?
Yeah.
So I could spend $20 on Facebook. You would not believe the results we can
absolutely
get with $20 on Facebook.
Targeted Facebook ads are incredible.
You know, but you cannot use the easy button. We've talked about this before. You can't click boost post.
No.
You got to dive under the hood and learn a skill that has to do with, you know, using all the targeting functions and everything. We don't even train our clients to use the main Facebook ad interface, the ad manager. We say, look, use the Power Editor. Download your stuff to the Power Editor.
That's how I use the Power Editor.
So much you can do inside the Facebook Power Editor.
Okay, so that's something you can do on a budget of just very little.
Very little.
And you can test it, and you can practice, actually. You can learn as you go. Pretty cheaply.
You can fail quickly and inexpensively, but here's why.
But you do a new ad campaign for each post.
Each
that you
test.
Write.
Yeah.
Well however you want to do it.
You don't have to do a new campaign per se. You could.
But so that's how you promote your content. You don't pay Google Ads to promote
correct.
Your content.
No, you pay Facebook to promote your content. But here's the other reason why I would promote the content. I would focus on content first, because content builds over time. And so, like you said, if you're just doing it organically, you're doing no posting, you may have an early hit, but you should expect it to take 3 months before you see a result. I mean, really are not going to get an immediate hit. And so the next thing that you would do, the reason that I believe it's so important, is that it snowballs. Your first piece of content is a little snowflake at the top of the mountain. The next one is another. But over time, after you create content over time, you create something that has big impact.
Sure.
Like the pool company, and you won't see it overnight, but you know what? It doesn't go away. That's the thing. Anything else that you do, you go to a networking meeting, you get whatever you get out of that. And somebody might keep your business card and call you 2 years later.
No, that's not what's going
to
happen.
I'm telling you, it's possible. Okay. And you can hold on to that hope if you wish. But your blog post can still be found in Google search results 2 years from now. But by then, if you've done your content work consistently, it'll be much more likely to be high ranking.
And that content that ends in your blog post can be used across a lot of other mediums.
You can
put it in a lot of places. Then you've already done the work for it. Sometimes it's a little bit of repackaging. Sometimes it's almost no repackaging.
Stick it in an email campaign.
Very easy. Yeah. That's right. Use an email campaign.
All sorts of stuff. Yep. Absolutely. So that's why my first priority for any business in that situation would definitely be content.
How do you get press on the cheap? If you're just getting started, how do you hustle and get press without money?
Without any money, without hiring somebody to get you some. All right. The quick tips would be to write a press release, to understand that what the press is looking for, what the media outlets are looking for, is something newsworthy. It doesn't have to be like a plane crashing newsworthy, particularly if you're looking for business.
Plane crashing.
Are you watching Better Call Saul?
Yeah.
So he pulls the amazing publicity stunt of life. It's brilliant. And I won't ruin it, but I'll tell you what. I just sat back and I said, whoever wrote this is a thing of beauty. The publicity stunt was brilliant.
Anyway. So I recommend highly against publicity stunts as a rule.
Really?
Yeah, stunts. Now, promotional campaigns,
if they can be detected as stunts.
I mean,
right?
If you're as good as Donald Trump at publicity stunts, have at it. But otherwise, it could really backfire on your business credibility. The credibility of your business.
Interesting. So I've never heard that.
That's one of those I would be really cautious about doing. But media on the cheap. Look, find something. If you're expanding into a new market, if you've got a new product or a new service, any little thing that we call in the industry a hook.
Something unique.
Something unique that's a hook that the editor can say, okay, this is worth running with. Then you write that up in a press release. So you date it. You have your contact information, your name and your number on it for how the media can get a hold of you. Media contact. Then you have that in a Word document. You send it, you email it to the proper people. You got to take a little time to research. Who's the business editor at your paper?
You don't do a PDF? You send it as a Word doc?
I do as a Word doc.
Oh. It
doesn't matter. Either one's fine. I do it as a Word doc. Either one's fine. There's nothing magic there.
I've been told not to send attachments to these people, though. Like, you should actually put it in the body of the email.
All right. So I have different publications that want it pasted in the email and some that want it Word doc. Drives me batty because these are the ones that actually I could do the same thing to all of them. And now I got to keep track of which one. Because you want to do it the way they want it. But check out, what are the business publications?
How do you find out which way they want it? Do you just know because you know them?
Usually they'll let you know. And look, if you've never contacted them, ask them. Send them an email. I have an email I'm going to be sending you tomorrow. How would you like that? And then that actually plants it in their head that they've got an email coming from you, too.
Hey, that's
you got
a good
press
tip
release.
Because now you got a name. You know there's a real person on the other end of the email address.
Right. If they have a preference, they're happy to tell you.
Would you do that approach on Twitter, too? Aren't they going to be more responsive to a mention on Twitter?
You might get a reporter on Twitter. I don't know about an editor.
I mean, obviously, I like the idea of getting permission or buy-in from a social network like Twitter, where it's on a safe public place. And then you're asking permission. Hey, can I send you an email? And they will have seen your name before you send it.
If you are sending them a press release, they want press releases. I mean, that's probably what
they thrive on content.
That's
right.
What they are. If they're editors, they need to keep filling content. And now, since most of them have a daily email blast, they have to fill up those email blasts. So that actually has lowered the threshold what's newsworthy for them.
Do you email the editor or the reporter?
Editor.
Really?
Yeah.
Because sometimes I'll find a reporter that's written a story that's similar.
There's nothing wrong with that. And honestly, depending on the publication, I'll do both. But as a rule, it's the editor, because most places have assigning editors. But if you have a relationship with a reporter already, definitely do the reporter then.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that makes sense. Hey, these are excellent tips. I'm telling you, these are really good tips, because I've emailed many a press release and, you know, it's crickets.
Right.
And then we've also gotten stories published. I had one press release printed verbatim in a print publication in this town. Never heard from a reporter or an editor. They just ran it word for word.
They're clearly filling the gray space between the ads.
That's what they were doing. And you know what? I was happy to fill it up. Right. I was kind of pleased because I saw my own writing in print under someone else's name.
Do we have a marketing school?
We have a marketing school. I've got my stuff here. Okay, so I'm going to just hit this really
quickly.
So
we're this high-tech sort of marketing sort of gurus and all. We got marketing school coming up for you, and we have the David Johnson who's getting out printouts, paper printouts.
Here's why they're printed out. Yesterday,
paper's dangerous.
We were running. Paper we cuts. Killed trees just to do this. No, we yesterday we were doing a blogging workshop. We did a half day
workshop on how to write a business blog successfully, and this was for business owners who wanted to do this. And it just happened that we covered some of this material in the so I had this already printed for that reason, because my computer was being used for the presentation itself. See. So that's why I had it on paper.
If you only had like a iPad or something like that.
What does this paper say?
This paper is gold right here. This is worth a lot of money. Okay, this is, so we'll do this really quickly because we're pretty late in the show today, but let's do this really quickly. You're going to send an email. Your subject line is the headline for your email. It's the ad for the content. You're going to write a blog post. The title of your blog post is the ad for the content, right? So these are headline strategies. Whether you're creating an ad and you need a headline, whether you're sending a subject or an email and this is your subject line, or whether you're writing a blog post or a social post, any kind of social post for that matter, yeah, and you need to have a hook. You talked about a hook, Rod. Then you put it in the headline. So I'm going to mention a guy by the name of Ted Nicholas. He was a world famous copywriter. He wrote books and stuff that he sold directly. All right,
he wrote stuff.
Well, let me give you a quick example. Late 70s, Rod, you probably remember this, and on into the early 90s, which is about when you were born, Josh. He said he sold a book in print publications that was something like how to incorporate your own business for less than $50 or $75 or whatever it was. And did you ever see those ads that were using the back? He ran them in the Wall Street Journal. He ran them in all sorts of publications. I don't remember.
I mostly try and forget the 70s, to be honest.
Okay. Well, this is late 70s, all through the 80s, and into the 90s. Right, you know,
those were better decades.
Yeah. Losing me.
Ultimately, he founded a business that he sold for a lot of money. That was the Corporation Company. And but Ted wrote this
Corporation
book.
Company?
Oh, yeah. Dude, they made a lot of money doing like what LegalZoom does today. Because business owners were having to pay attorneys to get their corporations built.
Sorry, LegalZoom sounds like such a better branding name than Corporation Company.
Yeah. Corporation Company did well. I remember that.
Oh, you remember it?
I do remember Corporation Company.
He wrote all their ads.
Because they were helping people incorporate.
No, I understand
this
what they were doing.
This was a new idea. Right. Self-serve legal stuff was a whole new idea back then. It was completely unheard of.
I just don't like the brand. That's all.
Okay, I understand.
Move on.
Yeah, but this was 20 years ago when he sold it. But he let's say the book was maybe 20,000-30,000 words. I don't remember how long the book was, but let's say it was a healthy size book, you know, 20,000-30,000 words. By the time he sold the company, he had written over 1 million words of sales copy to sell the book.
Whoa.
He was hugely successful at ads. And his point was 73% of the buying decisions that he measured were made from the headline itself. Doing testing with the same copy, changing headlines, he got different results. Right. And he said 73% of the decision was made from the headline. So this is why it's so important. So if you're doing print, email, doesn't matter. You need a good headline.
So you should almost start with the headline.
You should spend most of your time working on the headline.
If not start, sometimes it's better to write the body because that gives you a really good idea of what the headline could be. But really spend a lot of your time getting the headline right.
Because you're going to create the ad for the content.
Yeah.
But I'll be honest with you. Sometimes I work on the headlines first. I do it both ways. But sometimes I'll create a good headline first, and then that drives the content. And so I do this when I'm creating blog posts. I do it when we're writing emails. I do it when we're creating ads of any kind. So one of my tips.
Start with the hook.
Yep. So you need to make a bold promise, right? Where possible, you should make a bold promise. And I have a slide for this that's a sign on a piece of property that says, trespassers shot, survivors prosecuted.
Boom.
You know, usually you see trespassers will be prosecuted. Right. No, they say trespassers will be shot and the survivors will be prosecuted, right? So you just need to make a bold promise. Sometimes you can take a strong position on something, positive or negative. I like to do a benefits exercise, right? So what's the benefit of this content? So instead of saying, I'm going to show you five ways to create a press release, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of doing that, what would be the benefit of my content? If I was good at it, Rod, if you wrote that piece, what would be the outcome of someone reading that content?
How to get massive coverage for your idea.
Right. You actually get printed or covered by the media instead. So
right. You
think about the benefit of the content, right? But then what would be the benefit of getting the coverage, Josh?
Customers.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're really not trying to teach people how to write press releases. You're teaching people how to get customers because they got massive coverage.
Because they did a good press release.
Because they wrote a good press release. So yep. Any business can do this. It's a simple exercise. You think about the benefit, and then you think about the benefit of that benefit, and then carry it on as many levels as you want. You know, what would you do if you had more customers?
Oh, yeah.
You'd grow, right?
Yeah.
You'd go home early because you don't have to work so hard anymore. You're making more money.
You could title this post, how to buy a yacht or how to get a yacht in 5 steps.
How to get a yacht by writing better press releases.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or something, I don't know.
There you go.
Okay, so another concept we do is you could put the ultimate benefit, write a headline around that, but another thing that we do is stacking. So you take the strongest benefits. So how to get more customers, how to get massive media coverage, more customers, and make enough money to go home early every day. That's stacking. You take the 2-3 yep. benefits and you put them
and
together.
And that works on the title of a blog post. That doesn't really work on an email subject header because the email subject header
depends.
Can't be very long.
If you're sending it to a reporter, probably not. But you have about 70 characters to work with in an email. So the one I just said would,
I know, but most email
would be
clients
too long.
Don't display them. They only display
depends.
Like
yeah.
Like if, 10 words, right?
I mean, like if you're looking at mobile, yeah, you're right. A lot of people are using mobile. Google. If you're using Gmail, you get a lot. Plus, you get beyond the subject line, you get into the little snippet at the top of the emails, which is another thing that you got to pay
good
attention
point.
To with emails. But then there's the visualizer, and then we're gonna have to cut this short. Visualizer is the picture yourself concept, right? Imagine yourself going home early because you're having a record week in sales. I'm sticking with the same theme that we just had. That's too long, but you've all seen these done well, a visualizer. You think about the benefits of the benefits, and then you just get an emotional pitch, and you tell the reader, picture yourself sipping a pina colada in Costa Rica after you retired there because you sold your highly profitable business that grew so much because you learned how to write good press releases, and I'm totally going too long here, but you get the idea.
Yep.
It's the visualizer exercise. And if you want more of these, maybe these should go in our free giveaway, our download that we're going to create
so.
For our podcast.
Maybe
I want to hear from you.
So.
Do you want more of those? I've got more of them. You let us know. So if you're a listener to this episode and you want some of those, then it's your job to write in.
I got a million of them.
Yep.
And by write in, we mean digitally contact us. Don't actually write in.
Go to thegrowthshow.com/009 for today's episode, and that'll get you all of the show notes from today. And if you go to our website, though, thegrowthshow.com, you can subscribe. You can pick up the podcast on iTunes or any of the ways that you might normally get a podcast. And there are comment forms all over the place. So comment, let us know, and we will listen to you. We also want to hear what questions you have. You got a PR genius, you got a young tech wizard, and you have a strategist. We are ready to answer your questions on this podcast. It's our goal to make this the most useful marketing thing you've ever consumed, whether it's a podcast, book, whatever. That's our goal with The Growth Show. Am I not? I'm pretty
absolutely
yeah, that's what we want, right?
And Jay Bear, I actually know who you are. I just said what I said earlier just for the heck of it.
You're just trying to test me to make me tell
well,
the story.
I wanted to
you?
See if our audience knew who they were.
All right.
So
that's
you
cool.
know, I made you talk about it.
All right, well, that was fun. Nice save, Josh. All right, hey, tune in next time for lots more great stuff you can use to grow your business. We'll see you then on The Growth Show.
Thanks for listening to the Grow the Dream Show. We invite you to subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app. Get connected to our growing community, add your comments, ask questions, and listen to the archives on the web at growthedream.com/show.